You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Hour number two of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show rolls along and is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Zach Jones and Josh Mint hanging out with you here today. And we're going to the Western Hotline as we are joined by our own Sal Capaccio, as the Bills do have a game on Monday night against the Jacksonville Jaguars, part of a doubleheader, the other being Washington and Cincinnati. Practice yesterday, Sal. How'd it look?
Well, like a normal practice, and including Josh Allen having his hand taped still. I'm sorry, the glove on the hand and the fingers taped together with the glove, obviously. So, you know, the good news is, well, the bad news is they didn't have Trell Bernard or Taron Johnson, and we know that, right? I mean, that's bad news because it's obviously two very important players. The good news is, guys, everybody else practiced. Like, those are the only two guys right now dealing with injuries. Throughout all these injuries, yes, you still don't have Matt Milano, of course. You know, he's on IR. But of the active players on the roster, the only two who didn't practice yesterday are two very important players, but it is the only two. DeJuan Smoot came back to practice. He's trending towards playing. And Javon Solomon came back to practice. He's trending towards being able to play. Whether or not, you know, he'd be active, you know, that might be just a numbers decision.
Sal, another thing too that McDermott said, and maybe it shouldn't have caught me by surprise, but it did a little bit when I saw it on Twitter, was that he just kind of outright said who would be starting at middle linebacker, and it's Baylen Spector. He kind of was somebody we were talking a little bit about in during training camp, of just, you know, couldn't stay healthy, you know, he kind of didn't know where it was going. He was sort of connected with the Joe Andreessen stuff. But what'd you see against him with Miami, and then now, of course, going forward?
Baylen Spector is a very much a throwback classic middle linebacker. You know, the game, the position has changed a lot. We've seen, you know, even Terrell Bernard. Now Terrell Bernard is what you would call an undersized linebacker, but I push back a little bit on that these days. I think middle linebackers are becoming a little bit more undersized compared to what we always have seen from them. Baylen Spector is an inch shorter, but he's also 10 pounds heavier than Terrell Bernard. He is a guy that is more straight line, north and south, go make a tackle. He can go sideline to sideline. He's capable. He played a little bit of will linebacker early in his career with the Bills. They moved him exclusively now to the Mike linebacker, where he sets up everybody's in the middle of the defense. But he's more of your classic north-south linebacker, and I thought that's what he did. That's what he did well against Miami. I mean, the guy, I think he had 10 tackles in the time he was in there, and he missed, you know, whatever, the first couple series maybe it was, but because Bernard had been playing. But that's what he does. He sees the ball, and he goes after the ball, and he gets the ball. And he's pretty good tackler. You know, obviously people are going to miss some once in a while. I think he did miss one. He missed one, I think, if I remember correctly, on a play. But he's going to be physical when he gets there. He's going to, you know, make sure he's going to make tackles, you know, in between the two tackles, I guess. And that's a good thing. I my concern is a little bit in coverage. We've talked about this, where him and Dorian Williams together, not great coverage linebackers. Maybe the Jags attack them. We'll see. But the Bills have some time to, you know, get that straight. But I do like the way he is physical and attacks the football.
Now, you kind of led me into the next question there, Sal. With Baylen Spector and Dorian Williams being this pair that we're going to see here, how do you think they can adapt to that, you know, issues in coverage and sort of things like that? Because I feel like with the Jags, it's a little bit of a different opponent than the Dolphins, obviously, right? I mean, Trevor Lawrence is a different quarterback than Tua, but they don't have the wide receivers like the Dolphins do. So is that going to be as much of an issue, or what do you kind of anticipate there with that coverage issue?
Well, I think number one is Evan Engram is a big key component, but I just tweeted out a little while ago, Doug Peterson, the Jaguars coach, said that Engram is, quote, a little bit further away. To me, that sounds like he's not trending to play against the Bills. That would be a massive loss for them. That would be a guy that I think could attack the second level. They'd like to, but, you know, they'll have time to prepare. Travis Etienne can catch the ball out of the backfield. It is a much different, you know, team than the Miami Dolphins as far as so receiver-oriented, where, yes, they are, and they have guys. Gabe Davis, Christian Kirk, they have guys they can throw to. Brian Thomas Jr., obviously, off to a great start. But these are more like, these are guys in the boundary, you know, like Miami has. But what they have is they have guys that they can throw underneath to as well. But again, if they don't have Evan Engram, that's obviously something that that would be a massive loss for them. So, yeah, look, what can the Bills do? They can stick with playing their dime coverage on passing situations, you put Jamarcus Ingram in there as a dime safety if he is still the guy. We know that Cam Lewis is going to play, you know, nickel corner. And I think that you can blanket the field a little bit more with some coverage players, but then you are susceptible a little bit more to the run. So it's got to be a bit of a balance here in how the Bills want to play it.
Sal, bringing up defense here today, and this has sort of become the main topic of discussion this morning. Did you see Mel Kiper's comments real quick from ESPN today?
I did. I didn't listen to the whole thing. I heard about him, and then I saw a little bit of it.
All right, stupendous. So then my question really is here is, where do you kind of sit with this? For me, at least personally, it's 2 weeks of numbers kind of being down. Now, we do have years showing that it was progressively going down. I just feel like some of us are being a bit aggressive and like rules need to be changed. No, I've got Daniel Jeremiah tweeting out, you know, maybe we should talk about, you know, bringing the hash marks to the college level instead of the pros. And it's just, I feel like we're looking towards maybe a massive overcorrection here just because defense has been ahead of the offense for effectively 5 minutes.
Yeah, I agree. Even if it lasts a whole year, I wouldn't do that. I mean, at some point, isn't it okay to play defense? At some point, isn't it okay for them to do what they have to do to stop the offense? That's the name of the game. I mean, you have an opponent. There's one side of the ball is offense, one side of the ball is defense. And no one seemed to have a problem when offenses were putting up 40 points a game and we had these wild video game numbers. I always kind of hated that, to be honest with you. Everybody says how fun it is. Funny part about this, guys, is like, true story. I kind of lost touch with college football for a few years because it just got so stupid watching everybody score every possession. Like, what are we doing? Right? And then the NFL kind of got like that in a bit of a way. I enjoy good defense. It doesn't mean that I'm old school, ground and pound, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. What I do appreciate, though, is the strategy of defense being able to stop offense, making tackles, forcing third and longs, and coming up with strategy and blitzing and sacks, and that's okay. It's okay for me. I can sit and watch a 20-17 or even a 17-10 football game and be thoroughly entertained because of the chess match that goes on. Why do we have to jump right away to, oh my God, we have to make sure that we can score 30 points a game? No, we don't. How about we allow coaches to coach and players to play and allow the game to be what it's supposed to be, which is competitive people on both sides of the ball doing their jobs. I think Mel Kiper is way off. Way off. I mean, come on. What are we talking about here? Changing the outlawing two high safeties? I mean, listen, I played football in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, growing up. And even throughout, you know, coaching in the late 90s, 2000, two high safety has been a staple of the game for a long, long time. Even when quarterbacks were throwing it over the top. There's just different ways that teams are going about it. There's different disguises and coverages. I mean, I just think it's, like you said, a massive overcorrection or reaction to 2 weeks. I think even if it's a whole year of this happening, it would be a massive overreaction and correction.
And yeah, just like I made the joke earlier to Josh, too. I'm like, you know, Sean McDermott's probably sitting here, you know, as Bills head coach, defensive guy, too. And he seemingly has like the perfect system as this is kind of happening. See, I even think you tweeted that, like the perfect system at the perfect time. And he's sitting there going like, I'm finally the bride. And then some people in the NFL are like, no, always a bridesmaid. You're a defensive head coach. We cannot allow that. It's just, I'm like, guys, like, let's, and I agree with you. I've always been a college football junkie. But yeah, there was a time when it was just like the only time it seemed like you got like any sort of defense was the SEC. And that was somewhat, you know, made fun of for a long time of like, you know, how dare LSU and Alabama finish like 17-14. We need 65-60 and 7 overtimes. I can never get behind that. I'm glad the game is sort of changing. And yeah, I'm with you. Like even after a year, I kind of want to see this go on. I want to see the offense coordinators, you know, for lack of a better phrase, earn their paychecks.
Yeah, for sure. Like there's really smart people that are paying a lot of money to stop these quarterbacks who are just too really really talented. They're too good both throwing the ball and running the ball, and they have to figure out ways, you know, be able to do that. I mean, a game like tonight, I'm actually kind of looking forward to how these two teams who I think have limited offenses, even the Jets with Aaron Rodgers, I think have a limited offense. I'm interested to see how these two teams counteract each other because it's going to take, you know, the other part of it is now it becomes more on offensive coordinators to scheme and to strategize. It's not just, oh, we have the best quarterback, so we're going to go out there and score points. Hey, fight through it. Figure something out. I read something really good last week about how well the Green Bay Packers were able to adjust to Malik Willis playing quarterback over, you know, instead of Jordan Love. And like, hey, that's a good coaching job. Like you want to see good coaching jobs, right? That was really good and really nice what they were able to do. Exactly. I think on both sides of the ball, allow these people to do their job, get paid, and you know, let them go out and settle. We've made a lot of rules that help offenses. And finally, defenses have kind of caught up here. There's been a couple of shifts here and there to help the defense. I think there's less penalties called on them. I hope the NFL does not also go back to that, by the way. That's the one thing I hope I don't see and we don't see, which is, does the league respond by saying, let's start calling more penalties on the defense if they're going to do this, make them pay for it? You know, I don't want to see that either. I think the offenses have had way too much of an advantage over the last several years of football, and it's nice to see it go back the other way a little bit.
So another thing, Sal, that you brought up there a little bit is offensive coordinators kind of changing their games a little bit here. And, I mean, we have this young wave of guys that almost got head coaching jobs or did, like in Shane Steichen, or looking at like Bobby Slowick, Ben Johnson, even Clint Kubiak down in New Orleans. Is it potentially going to lead to a new wave of offensive thinking? Are these guys going to be the pioneers of something new? Like how we're seeing right now, all these defenses are coming up with this. And I mean, granted, it's been part of the game forever, but it's more of a relevant piece now. Are the offenses going to try to find a new way to counteract that over the next season or two, if as long as the NFL doesn't step in? Because if that happens, then, well, you know, they just stay the same and everything is what it is. But I don't want to see that. I want to see these guys with these new young offensive minds trying to come up with something new to kind of counteract this.
Oh, I 100% agree with you. I think they will. I think that's what they're trying to do and trying to figure it out. But look, they were doing this going into this year. This is not taking coaches by surprise. And if it is taking a coach by surprise, then your coach shouldn't be a coach. Every coach in this league has seen this coming. And if they didn't see it coming, then I don't know, then they're inept, because they should have. I talked to plenty of coaches at the owners' meetings last year, this year, back in March, about this very thing. Sean McDermott brought it up. Brandon Bean brought it up about when they're at the combine with the owners' meetings. I talked to offensive coaches, Sean McVay, Andy Reid, Brian Daboll, talked to Nick Sirianni. I talked to a lot of these coaches about this, and they all said the same thing. They all saw this coming. And this is what defense has been doing for several years, and offenses say, now we have to find a way to react to this. And none of them said, oh my God, I can't believe it. This really sucks. It's like, oh yeah, now we have to find a way to react to this. What are you going to do? And the response has been shorter passes, get the ball to your playmakers. They have to make people miss as far as tackles are concerned. And then you get the ball down the field a little bit of a different way. So yes, I do think it's incumbent now upon these smart offensive coaches to figure out ways to do this. And that's what we're seeing, maybe the separation between some of the teams that have or haven't yet.
And it kind of puts into perspective what the Bills were doing this offseason, at least on the offensive side of the ball. It's early through two games now. We got, you know, week three coming up here starting tonight. But the Bills effectively got, you know, three slot receivers, Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir, and you know, if you want to throw in Dalton Kincaid in there as well. They've gotten bigger on offense. They seem more, you know, geared towards Yak. I think the Bills were kind of showing you that they knew what was coming. And now they potentially have the personnel to combat it. At least so far, I've kind of enjoyed how the offense has played. We haven't really gotten to see them, though, have a massive game yet, Sal. I mean, me and Josh are talking about it, too. Against the Cardinals, they ran the ball a lot in the first half, going up against last year a really bad run defense. It worked in the first half, not too much in the second, but they pivoted and started passing. And then against Miami, you couldn't really see much. It was short time of possession due to turnovers, and the game was kind of over really fast. We haven't really had to see the Bills' offense kind of, you know, flex their muscles a little bit and really stretch out and kind of see a full game plan.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, what the Jags are going to do against the Bills. If you guys read Warren Sharp at all, he's real good with some of this stuff. He actually tweeted out today, he has his preview, and he wrote that the Jags actually run a lot of man coverage, and Josh Allen just torches man coverage. And this year, he's only seen it 16 times. Of those 16 times, he's thrown three touchdowns and averaging 8 yards an attempt. So if the Jags want to run man-to-man against Josh, well, Josh A can really beat that with his arm, and then now it's on your receivers to have that separation where, you know, that might be why teams would run man coverage. They don't think the Bills have the receivers to separate. But let's also remember, if you're on man coverage, you're very much risking Josh Allen to run against you and use his legs, which is really what happened on the play that Buda Baker, you know, he jumped over him because there's a lane there, because guys are running with their back turned because they're following receivers, and then Josh sees a lane, he can go. So I'm interested, too, in what the Jags will try to do to combat the Bills offense, which has been at the forefront of this whole thing that we're talking about here.
So I really needed to hear that, because I think you brought it up yesterday too. You don't buy into the whole like historical, like, you know, results and stuff like that. I'm the opposite. I really do. So whenever I see the Bills playing the Jaguars, I'm like, oh no, not again. Not another game against the Jaguars. So I need like any positivity going into this, because I find myself almost dreading Monday night, and I shouldn't. Like, they have not looked good offensively. Drops still seem to be a bit of an issue for the Jaguars. Their offensive line, even with the addition of Mitch Morris, has not been very good really at all. And then, yeah, I mean, the injury to Evan Engram as well is going to really, I think, hurt their offense. He's one of the only, I don't want to say consistent weapons, but I mean, he's kind of one of the only like guys you can definitively go to. The other guy seems to be rookie Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU.
Yeah, he's off to a really good start. Gabe Davis is exactly the player for the Jags as he has been for the Bills so far. They'll use him for some stuff down the field. He's not going to get a lot of separation even down the field, but really, you know, on certain routes, coming back, you know, breaking in, breaking out, things like that. But they'll use him there. We'll see if they have anything in store for him specifically this week because of, you know, playing against his former team. I think the Jags have a lot of talent on offense, and they have a very good offensive-minded head coach. They are reeling here. They can't go 0-3. They know that. I think they're going to have a lot of attention to detail to practice this week. If they come to Buffalo and beat the Bills, I will not say it's because the Jags and the Bills, and this is what always happens, and this is historical. I will just think that they played a better game that day. Although, to your point, I would respect anybody who thinks that, because obviously there's a bit of a history here now.
It's super fun. I hear the name Urban Meyer and I just roll my eyes. It hurts. Sal, yep. Last thing for me. We will not be able to talk tomorrow. I am heading out of town. I'm going to a wedding. But we have a very exciting college football game tomorrow night as historic ACC rivals Stanford at Syracuse. How are we feeling?
Good. I think Syracuse is favored. This is not a great Stanford team. And Syracuse obviously is playing pretty well. They're getting votes right now. I don't think they're top 25. I think they are getting votes in some of the polls that I've seen. But I'm pretty sure if I look, I think they were favored the last time I checked.
8.5-point favorites.
Yeah. So look, their dome's going to be rocking on a Friday night. And Syracuse has a really good opportunity here, guys, to be a pretty good team. You know, they beat a nice Georgia Tech team. They have Stanford. They get Holy Cross. They do have a very tough game at UNLV coming up in October. You know, and then a lot of the ACC games are going to be battles. NC State, Pitt, Virginia Tech, Boston College. There's some good teams in there, but I think Syracuse has been holding their own. The biggest thing for me, you know, watching them, boy, Kyle McCord, what a great, great pickup through the transfer portal. He's looked fantastic so far. They're one of the top offensive teams in the country, specifically throwing the football right now. They have receivers, Aronde Gadsden. He's really a tight end, but he's a, you know, receiver. He's switched to tight end, basically. They have some really nice players on that side of the ball, and I just think that they've done a really good job of kind of incorporating how you have to play now in college football as well.
Should be a fun game. 7:30 kickoff at the Dome. All right, Sal, we'll let you get out of here, get ready for practice, and we'll talk again later.
You got it, guys.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. And yeah, Syracuse has been a lot of fun. Fran Brown's building a really good program, came over with a lot of recruiting acumen into the college game. And yeah, they blew out Ohio 38-22. Georgia Tech, a team coming off that fun Florida State win, which ultimately has looked way worse as the weeks have gone on.
What's going on with Florida State? Are they just always... They're just bad, right?
DJ, So we just saw the GM thing come out with College Sports yesterday.
Yeah, right.
Adrian Wojnarowski becoming the men's basketball GM at St. Bonaventure. I don't want to totally jump into this yet. I'm somewhat reading on this because of the GM stuff now. I'm like, ooh, I kind of want to know what's going on here, all that stuff. A lot of major programs have these guys already, guys and gals in college football. Florida State is one of them. And it does seem to be Florida State's guy really handles the recruiting, and that has been the biggest issue from what I've seen. I want to read more on it, but yeah, they've been a disaster. They look bad. The biggest thing there too, Josh, and obviously, you know, there's no preseason really in college football.
Yeah.
They'll play FCS teams or lower ranked teams, you know, bye games, but there's no real preseason. So a lot of what, you know, the hype we get around these teams is reporters and people like that going to these spring practices and these fall practices and talking to the coaching staffs and, you know, somewhat off the record being like, tell us about the team, you know, like so that we can kind of put this all together and they'll be as honest as they can be with you. And that's where you can kind of end up seeing like what programs are truly stunned by either their success or their failures. It's typically failures. Florida and Florida State seem to be the examples of stunned by their failures. Florida State came in talking about how good their defensive line was, how DJU is going to be an amazing quarterback for them, and they think they've got the right system for him, what have you. Florida, their AD goes on the Paul Feinbaum show the day before the Miami game, talking about how amazing this game is going to be. Florida's here, you know, they've got DJ Lagway, a quarterback, or, you know, as a freshman quarterback, and he's coming in next year. Like, we're going to be amazing. And what has happened to both teams? They've been completely wrong on everything, and they look shell-shocked by it. That's where, if you're a fan, you're really concerned, is when your coaching staff looks like they have no answers because everything they thought in the preseason, effectively preseason, has proven to be completely false. I will say, though, real quick on Syracuse, super pumped for that UNLV game. Who does UNLV think they are? They look really good, and they saw some teams going to the quote-unquote Pac-12. Pac-6, six-pack, love it.
And, six-pack.
And they're like, wait a second. I saw that on Twitter. That is not my idea.
Oh,
that is,
man,
not my idea.
I thought you just put that on the fly.
No, that is not my idea. I saw it on Twitter. And UNLV was like, we're the Vegas market, baby. You better be like looking at us. We're not the two-win team UNLV you knew for like 15 years. We're good now.
So, you know, you were talking a lot there about concern and issues and problems. You know what I just stumbled upon on Twitter? This drama in Bearsland in Chicago.
Oh, no.
Roma Dunze's father is tweeting out videos of Roma Dunze wide open on routes.
Good.
James Odunze, this quote, I'm reading it, or this tweet, I'm reading it word for word. So, a quick reference guide for those who were, for those with the initials D-O and work for the Entertainment and Sports Programming Network. And he typed it out so you could read down, and it says ESPN. And, I mean, it's one video of Roman Dunze being wide open in the end zone. But it's in response to the, like, a chart of notable rookie wide receiver separation rates. And Roman Dunze is not on the list. Or he's fifth on the list, I should say. Sorry, he's fifth on the list. But still. So, it sounds like his dad's taking a little... offense there.
Two games in, he's already upset.
Now, and the question is he mad at the Bears? Is he mad at ESPN? Is he mad at both?
I love it.
The deal?
Never forget, sports is the best trashy TV show that you're addicted to. Don't give me Gossip Girl. Don't give me Emily in Paris. Don't even give me Love Island and all that stuff. It is sports. It is the best trashy TV show you can get. 803-0550 is the number to call. Rob will get to your call after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Over the course of my seven-year career so far, you know, the first 2 weeks, they're important, but in the grand scheme of things, it's 2 weeks, right? So whether we're 2-0, 0-2, 1-1, you know, there's 15 games still left to be played, and then no more bigger than the one that's in front of us right now, Monday night. But happy for those guys for getting some credit that they deserve. But if you ask them, they'd probably say they don't care much about it as well.
That was Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen. Talking about some of the early awards that have been given out. Greg Rousseau, week one AFC Defensive Player of the Week. James Cook, week two AFC Offensive Player of the Week. I just want one player to be like, you know what? I was really happy about getting the award. It really meant a lot to me. Just one time, just be like, it actually meant a ton. I called my mom immediately.
I would have thought, why didn't Jamarcus Ingram get Defensive Player of the Week? But then I'm like, well, his two interceptions were basically gifts.
Yeah. The pick six, though, you would have, yeah. But, like, I'd like James Cook to go, but like, how'd you feel? Instead of, like, you know, the team first. And I get it. I'm all for it. I understand it. But one time, I'd like him to get up there, smile on his face, and go, you know what? It really meant a ton, actually.
You know what? I had three touchdowns, and I felt great.
And I was given credit for it, and I felt amazing. Just one time. All I'm asking is one time.
You know what? I burned Jordan Poyer down the sideline, and I scored a touchdown, and I did a backflip or front flip, and it was really cool.
It was really cool. Also, I felt like Superman for 5 minutes.
Bills legend of the game.
Who do we got?
For Monday. Any guesses?
No.
You're not going to get it.
No.
John Fina, offensive lineman.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And we're talking about offensive lines today.
Boom.
There we go.
Also, speaking of offenses, more clarity on the Roma Dunze thing. So the real reason...
More clarity?
I thought it was because of the whole pass or the separation rate and everything like that. The real reason, the whole reason that Roma Dunze's dad appears to be going after Dan Orlovsky, and not appears to be, he just flat out said the initials D-O
straight up is.
That works for... ESPN. Dan Orlovsky tweeted yesterday, quote, the Bears and Caleb Williams are going to have to get more comfortable giving Rome more covered opportunities. Rome isn't getting open at this level right now. Caleb will have to get comfortable throwing him some 50-50 balls. And then, once again, Roma Dunze's father tweets out a video of him being wide open in the end zone. And mind you, it's a 3-second video.
So Johnny Man, sports.
That's the only one.
Sports are the best trashy TV show you watch. Again, it's not Gossip Girl. It's not Emily in Paris. It's not The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. It's not Love is Blind.
Some of the reality ones where it's like it's real life, like the dating ones, those get pretty.
Love is Blind is up
pretty
there.
Nasty. Yeah, yeah.
I'm two episodes in Love is Blind UK. It's bad. And I love every second of it. I only will watch like one episode a week, but I'm all for it. I need that palate cleanser, Josh. I do. Like I watch, you know, some, like I'm thinking about rewatching The Sopranos. I watch The Americans on FX. The West Wing I always rewatch every now and then. Obviously, everyone.
It's getting to the time of year where I'm going to rewatch Band of Brothers.
Band of Brothers. That's gritty.
Like the fall, winter time. That's what you like.
Did you ever watch Masters of the Air on Apple TV?
I've not yet.
Okay.
I'm waiting for it to all come out so I can just like binge it.
Yep. Oh, that's already out.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
that's done.
Guess what I'm doing this weekend?
You're going to have to do that. That's phenomenal. But yeah, so I'll watch like the gritty, you know, TV shows where afterwards I'm like, all right, I need to go make myself a drink. I'm exhausted. Like, I'm not going right. to think about my life.
The show was supposed to be for a break and you need a break from the break.
Exactly. You know, even when I read more like gritty, you know, harder material. I just read Cormac McCarthy's Blood Meridian. It changed me as a person. I need to watch like Love is Blind every now and then. You know, I need to watch Love Island where I'm like,
yeah, right.
I'm in an okay spot. Right. I may not be, you know, that pretty, but I'm in a good spot. I'm all right. I'm doing okay. I need that every now and then.
But hey, it compares to sports too. It's like, you know what? Look, these guys are fighting at each other, and sure, they're better at that sport than me, but hey, I'm not having arguments with my friends.
You don't understand, though, how real it was for me to watch bad Texas teams like lose to Kansas when Kansas was still bad. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm going to actively search out a bad like MAC game to make myself feel better. I'm so I mean that genuinely. Like I'd find like Kent State versus Akron and be like, yeah, my Texas though would whoop y'all. it was I'm not proud of it. I think it's fair to be open about it. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Rob in Connecticut. Rob, man, how are we doing today?
Good morning, Zach. Good morning, Josh. I don't know if Josh told you what happened last week. He usually doesn't answer the phone when Brownie and Tasker are on. So when I called and he answered, I was like, oh, hey, Zach, how you doing today? And he's like, I'm all right. And I said, Zach, you're all right. You don't sound like yourself. Is everything okay? And he's like, that's because I'm not Zach. It's Josh.
A little behind the scenes, yeah. It depends on the day, but we'll transition. We'll go through the transition, and it sometimes happens seamlessly. Other times it doesn't, where like we'll be talking with our boss or what have you, and all of a sudden a half hour's gone by, and it's like, oh, no.
Yeah. So that was kind of funny. Speaking of TV shows, I just put on the Aaron Hernandez story.
Oh, that's right. That started, yeah.
Yeah, I caught up with that. It's hard for me to watch, so I have to ask my fiance, like, when they're not talking, I was like, what's going on? Because I could kind of figure out what happened by watching the documentary. But other than that, I was listening to you guys before Sal came on and talking about the whole defense, you know, the safety drops and this and that and rule changes. And I started getting a little nutty in the head with that. I was like, no rule changes. Come on. You know, I was like, let the players play and the coordinators coordinate. And then Sal comes on and goes, let the players play and the coaches coach. Mm-hmm. I said, what's he, inside my head? He said exactly what I was going to say to you before Sal even came on. It was like when baseball, the pitchers count. They started putting down it. That's the strategy of the game. The defensive coordinator and the coaches figured out what to do, how to stop offenses, all right? And I mean, that's part of the game. That's like saying you can't move this chess piece a certain way. Oh, well, we're going to change it so you can move that chess piece a certain way. Mm-hmm. It's like, leave it alone. And if you want to watch exciting, wide open football, Saturday, all day, college football, go watch that. That's fun and exciting to watch. But leave the NFL alone, you know. It's like, let them do what they do, you know.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely. Like, that's where I've been at, Robin. Patient. Yeah, and Rob, thanks for the call, man. And that's kind of been my thing, too, is just like rule changes for health-wise, All for it. All for it. Rule changes to make the game, quote unquote, more exciting. I'm not really a fan of the kickoff rule. I'll be perfectly honest. I think it went exactly how I thought it was going to, or more or less fear how it was going to. We talked about it a lot in the offseason, which is teams will find out. It's just better to boot it out of the end zone, take the touchback, and start at, what, the 30? Rather than we saw it with the Bills. Kick it, let them return it, and all of a sudden, you know, players couldn't run down the field. They couldn't get there. They couldn't beat their blocks until the guy touches the ball, and it causes a lot of issues. Now teams are just like, nah, boot out of the end zone. It's the same play where you're just like, all right, it's bathroom break, it's snack break. I'm going to start a conversation here, what have you. I know we're going to go to commercial after this anyways. Who cares? And like that, you know, it's a shame, but that's kind of what it became. And that's where I'm at. Is rule changes to, quote unquote, make the game more exciting, I don't think oftentimes work. I actually, though, to Rob's point, he brought up baseball. I actually didn't hate the pitch clock. Which is funny because my dad is a baseball purist, so that has started some fiery conversations between him, myself, and my brother. But for me, I was like, I'm okay with that. I think there is some, you know, mystique and almost, you know, beauty in like an October baseball game going to, you know, October playoff baseball game going to like 2 in the morning. I don't need that in July, you know? I don't need a game that's half empty in, you know, April, May,
yeah,
to go 7 hours. I don't need that. Right. You know, I don't need that.
Well, and also think about, you know, Joe brought it up a little bit earlier, the two-line pass rule in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
The two-line pass rule was killing the NHL, and they got rid of it after the 2004-2005 lockout, and it created more offense. I mean, I know you're not newer to hockey, but I know hockey wasn't really your thing back then, but the two-line pass rule was the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And I was like a child, and I knew that.
I was
five, and I understood that it was the stupidest thing in the world. You couldn't pass from blue line to blue line and not get called for it. It was awful, and they got rid of it to make the game more exciting. But that's a moment where you made a rule. It was a dumb rule, and you tried to get it to slow the game down a little bit. And it actively hurt you. Mm-hmm. This, in the other way, on the other hand, would be completely different. You're hurting yourself still because you're limiting what these teams have to do to figure out how to be better. When you are when you are actively saying you guys figured out what to do, but you can't do it anymore, that's just wrong. I don't like that. Like I don't like the idea of it's just giving the offense as a cop out.
Yeah.
Like you can't do that. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, real quick, do want to bring up something here because I think we kind of forgot to bring it up because we brought on Sal. But we did get an update on Rasmus Dahlin's injury.
We did.
Lindy Ruff, speaking with the media, doing well, just will probably miss a couple of days of practice, so nothing too serious. Crisis averted. Everyone relax.
Everyone exhale. For now.
We were joking in the break with our boss. It's like, maybe my joke about Dahlin's gone. A little aggressive.
Also, if anyone's seen practice pictures coming out today, Lindy Ruff's back. He made players, when they had bad line changes, do sprints and push-ups.
Oh, I'm seeing the picture now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... Sabres hockey's back.
So you're taking this much more positive route, so just to be contrarian, I'm going to take this in the negative route.
No, stop.
Going to be real interesting to see if this team does not react well to a more old-school coach, I guess. Old-school, more authoritarian a little bit. Definitely much more accountability. I am now completely into observing how this team like is operating in practice.
If
the vibes are like all of a sudden they're all like angry all the time and they're getting snippy with people or what have you, like I'm into like watching this. You wanted this, guys.
Exactly.
And to be fair, you needed it.
You needed
accountability.
If that becomes a problem where everyone gets all upset, we're just going to play the clips of craving accountability on a loop for 24 hours because this is what the team wanted.
It's going to be radiothon for clips of the Sabres and, talking about accountability.
And you know what, though? I don't think that's going to happen, right? I the amount of players on this team that wanted that accountability, and they probably all did in some way, but some of them just maybe weren't as vocal as others. But I don't think that you're going to have a whole team turn on its head in a whole offseason and be like, wait, this isn't what we meant. This is what accountability is.
Wait, no.
No,
I agree.
This is exactly what that group wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, the group is still the same. And the players that came in, same kind of players. So it's not like you're bringing in a, you know,
completely new team with a new coach, with a new identity.
Well, I was going to say this type of player that would would be upset with the accountability. That's not what they were looking for. They knew they wanted to go in this direction. So they being the ownership group, not the players themselves. But it just feels, that part feels different.
Yep. 803-0550 is the number to call. Bob will get your call on the other side. You're listening to Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Quick final segment here. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We have been connected to our fans today. It's brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. And we are going to go back to the phones here as we've got Bob on the line. Bob, good morning. How are we doing today?
Good. How are you?
Doing very well.
I love your show. Just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on if Yuri Kulik actually gets a shot this year, and he dominated in the Prospect Challenge. He's gotten maybe two or three shifts in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to see, because they actually didn't address the top six, but like they said they would in the off season, and just wanted your guys' thoughts. I'm just kind of still kind of upset that they brought Ruff back and didn't actually do a coach search. Settling for mediocrity. I mean, do we bring back Darcy Regier at the same way? I mean, just...
I definitely get it.
Your guys' thoughts.
I get it, Bob. Yeah, thanks for the call, man. I will tell you, I was closer to what Bob was saying when Ruff was first hired. I was very much somebody that was like, this is a nostalgia hire. I was upset at the talk of there was a coach search, and then he was like the first head coach hired. I was like,
right.
Was there?
That was a bit questionable.
And to be fair, I want to see the results. I'm excited that Lee's there. I'm kind of on the same path with you where, you know, we are seeing accountability. They're essentially running laps.
Right.
You know, they're doing push-ups. You know, they're calling back drills, what have you. It sounds like that fits Rasmus Dahlin's personality as well. I heard Paul Hamilton talking about
this. He's not practicing.
No. on the Yuri Kulik thing, though, it feels like he has to really get a shot here.
And to his point there, I don't think he's going to be part of the top six, but I do think he's going to be part of the lineup. I don't think he, unless he comes in there and he, you know, proves himself very well, I just don't see him getting a spot in that top six yet. I mean, you have Benson, Quinn, Paterka, Cousins, Tage, Tuck. There's your top six. I don't know the lines or whatever, but as long as everyone performs the same way they did last year and better, that's your top six.
Mm-hmm.
And on the bottom six, you have guys like Zucker, Abe Kubel, Jordan Greenway, Peyton Krebs, Beck Malenstein, Sam Lafferty, and just one other guy I'm forgetting.
It's all right.
It's okay.
It's okay.
But there's one other one. And Kulik.
Yeah.
So there is a spot for him if he earns it, I think. He has
now,
to.
We were talking about this yesterday, too, because of the groups that were all put together. Mm-hmm. And this is very much a theory. I have no inside knowledge on this.
Right.
But him being part of that first group, I was like, ooh.
Ryan McLeod's the other one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
For me, with Kulik, it was, you know, seeing him part of that first group, it was like, all right, are they kind of putting him in a position of, you're on the roster until you prove you're not on the roster?
I think to a point he is, but I think it's also, this is the European roster, because they have to take extra, they can and they will take extra guys to Europe. I mean, you're halfway around the world. You're going to want to have a few extra bodies just in case injuries pop up, or you just want to see what other players look like. And I think that it's important that he's on that roster, because if he wasn't, then it's like, yeah, no, he's going to Rochester this year for sure. And I'm not saying that for every player that's not going to Europe, but a guy like Yuri Kulik, who you expect to be in the NHL, if he's not on that roster that's going to Europe, there's question marks for sure. And there's,
especially with Matt Savoy no longer being part of the organization,
exactly.
Kulik has sort of taken that spot as, I'm now the number one prospect.
Right.
Or it's arguably, but you know, you can argue he's the number one prospect now, and you want to see eventually one of these first round picks take that step and are now on the roster outside of Zach Benson, who is very much an outlier coming in at 18, first training camp, and makes the roster like that. And to be fair, probably also was a signal that the Sabres roster was not as talented as we were all hoping.
Yeah, and real quick, on some NHL ownership news, Andy Strickland, the beat reporter for Bally Sports Midwest for the St. Louis Blues, he tweets out, NHL owners will be meeting soon to approve the expansion opening. Leading candidates and ownership groups are believed to be in Houston and Atlanta.
Interesting. Didn't bring up Sioux Falls, South Dakota there.
Stop it. Where is this coming from?
I think that's a huge miss.
What are you talking about?
Sioux Falls, South Dakota feels like a hockey hotbed. That's going to do it for me and Josh Schmidt. You'll have Sal Capaccio tomorrow. He'll be meeting with Bills head coach Sean McDermott as well as we get ready for Monday Night Football after this weekend. Have a great rest of your week, everyone. This is WGR.